permitted one of his members, a Hebrew, to speak to Israel, to adopt the Australian with the Egyptian. Anyone who is born to adopt the morning, Honorable Masango.
Good morning, Chair. I would like to adopt the agenda, please, presented. Thanks.
Thank you, thank you very much. Then, if let's allow the minister to give us the political overview. Over to you, Minister.
Chairperson, I will also just show my, well, I think because the agenda is there, you can't see my face, but I am here. I'm not a robot. It's me. And I must apologize, Chair, that I stepped out of a cabinet committee meeting, which would need my attention after this, but I will be here for the some minutes before I go back to the cabinet committee meeting. So thank you very much, Chairperson of the Committee on Social Development, Honorable Nonko Simbana, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, Deputy Minister, I know she's not here because she's also in the same committee, cabinet committee where I am. The Acting Director General, Mr. Lintin Mchunu, Acting Chief Executive Officer of SASA, Raphahle Ramukopa, the CEO is on leave. Acting Chief Executive Officer of the NDA, Mr. Bumani Magongo, may I also take this opportunity, members, to thank you because we now have a board of the NDA, and I'm hopeful that the issue of the CEO will be resolved very soon. Senior managers and officers of the Department of Portfolio here present, and South Africans who are present here, and everyone else who is present here. A very good morning to you all, and thank you very much for the opportunity to brief you on the department's mandate, programs, and impact thereof with respect to children targeted violence and killings, something which, as South Africans, we need to put all our efforts together to make sure that it ends by ensuring that children in South Africa are safe. They're not only protected by the Constitution, but by the Constitution. There's someone who has said the chair. Someone is not muted, Chair, so I hope they can assist. Can you hear me?
Yes, Minister, we are
here. Hear you. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. So, Chairperson, globally, a series of empirical studies continue to demonstrate that child-targeted violence leaves lifelong markers such as trauma, reduced cognitive capabilities, impaired emotional development, dysfunctional social relations, distorted personal pursuits, limited economic participation, and the vicious abuse of others among its victims. It is unfortunate that actual child killings are the direct result of this violence. Early, ongoing, and repetitive physical abuse and assault, among these, I particularly draw your attention to sexual abuse, are some of the factors that lie beneath the unhealthy socialization patterns and social ills that are engulfing our society. And yes, children learn what they live and grow to live what they learn. And there's a lot of unlearning that will have to happen, both within our communities, the elderly and everyone else. There's a lot of unlearning that will need to be done. But unlearning that will be done by children is the one that becomes even much more difficult. The data that is at the disposal of the department suggests that South African children are exposed to environments wherein high levels of violence are being carried out. From this culture and tradition as a pretext to justify child-targeted violence and killing. According to the 2022-23 South African Police Service Annual Crime Statistics Report, an average of 9 children were murdered per day during the reporting period. If an epidemic were to start killing that number of children every day in South Africa, I'm certain that all of society would mobilize all of its expertise and resources until preventative measures and remedies were found to protect children. Likewise, I'm of the view that all of society should rally behind ending all phenomena that resulted in 17,488 children being victims of abuse and neglect, according to the department's child protection register during the same period. Children cannot be left to be prey in a society that is reconstructing itself towards recovery. And the recovery that we talk about is not just recovery for others, it is recovery for everyone, and that includes children. When South Africa says 2023 is the year of decisive action to advance people's interests in our society, children should be among the first to participate in conflicts. We must decisively and at once deal with the struggle by the brutality that are direct children of South Africa to be protected. Only when this is done can South Africa's national interest be guaranteed. This is particularly true in view of extremely intense forms of violence and violence that various media are exposing to our society. Person, I can take a moment here today. I'm still appalled and I'm still upset by the fact that even in killing general, you find people who would go to the media and be protected and be covered and be telling our communities and our society how this is their job, this is what they do. And we might take it that they're talking about themselves because they go and kill others. Who says they wouldn't kill children when children are abducted for one reason or the other? As the lead party in care and protection of children, the Department of Social Development is committed to the promotion and protection of the rights of every child. In accordance with Section 28.1 and 28.2 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the Children's Act, as well as other pieces of legislation that are relevant to children, the Department strives to ensure that all children in South Africa enjoy the care and protection that they are assured. They are assured of. Resulting from this, our approach to care and protection of children is rights-based, child-centered, gender-sensitive, universal, inclusive, transparent, while our programs are evidence-based and results-focused. This approach is followed through by the National Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Feminism. It is for the reason that children need to, at all feel safe, and that the necessary preventative measures need to be stressed in that the department has institutionalized the 365-day child protection program of action. The program of action emphasizes child advocacy, nurturing awareness and strengthening programs that are targeted at ensuring the care and protection of children, including online platforms. In this regard, we are working close in partnership with the key child protection partners, including other government departments, civil society, academia. To this end, the 365-day program of action is intended at maximizing collaborative efforts through which continuous social mobilization, community engagement, positive societal norms, and values can be reinforced and sustained. At the heart of the 365-day child protection program of action is our government's translation of its commitment of caring for and protecting the children from violence, child abuse, neglect, and exploitation, whilst also ensuring the well-being of every child within a nurturing community. May I also chairperson at this point in time indicate that I have been requesting the department think society that we need to deal with some of the social ills, in particular this on children and protection of children. We need to deal with it house to house, street to street, community to community, so that we can also go back to the old days where we knew, growing up being with children, that we would be protected by the neighbors, we would be protected by the community, we would be protected because we didn't even have a government that bothered about us. Having become a part five as a member party that pursues the global partnership and violence against children since 2017, South Africa is implementing the INSPIRE strategy that were initiated by World Health Organization in accordance with the goal of ending the violence against children. Chairperson, we are a member of the Pathfinder and I sit in that structure as a Minister of Social Development, but also in my capacity in general, just as individual. Throughout the years, this government has significantly scaled up the initiatives that tackle violence against children. To this end, we have increased the support that we offer to children through our social assistance program. Other programs that are implemented across the social development center include teenage parenting programs, community-based care programs, and child protection programs. These have all shown positive impact in the life of the South African child. And Chairperson, finally, in the quest to have desired outcomes and impact, our child protection partnership needs to be reinforced. These partnership reinforcements have greater prospects of definitely bringing child-targeted violence to an end. The form that these strengthened partnerships will assume will certainly be informed by the rigorous evaluation of the operation and gaps that underlie the universe of interventions and programs in this space. It is with this observation that we encourage the active contribution of children, families, and communities to the intersectoral collaboration and coordination processes that we set up to stem the harmful menace that predators are carrying out against children. Honorable Chair and honorable members, please allow me to call upon the department to render a presentation of the programs and services that are addressing violence against children. And I did indicate the person earlier on in speaking with Isabella that I think they need to focus more on what we are doing and probably not dwell so much into the causes. Well, they can talk about the causes, but they need to focus more on what the department, also in collaboration with other departments, are doing. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. You said a lot, which I like the way you put it. I'm sure everyone is at least on at ease right now. We will excuse you when time comes. I saw also the message from Honorable Leticia that she would like to be excused earlier. Then it's up to you, Leticia, when you want to leave, free to do so. Then, if it is the case, we are on the item number 3. But before that,
Chairperson, through you, Chair.
Acknowledge that we have the presence of Justice. Hello?
Chair?
Hello?
Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
Chairperson, I was going to advise that the DSG to remove their presentation as they are the second one to present, and we proceed with acknowledging the Justice Department Chair and start with their presentation. Thank you very much.
I don't see any presentation in our budget, Lindy. I was acknowledged Department of Justice and about to request them to introduce themselves, and I am saying they are all welcome. So I don't see any presentation from the department because
have a good day.
Thank you very much for that. Welcome, Department of Justice. Let's give over to you to introduce yourself, and if it's possible, you flight the video so that you are able also to flight the agenda. We just open up your cameras, and then if it allows you, you can put it on, but if it doesn't, you just put it on when you introduce yourself, and you can switch it off. Over to you, Department of Justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Advocate Praise Kambula. I am the one who will be making the presentation, but we made a request to the Secretariat that the IT people are with me right now. There's a problem that I have with my laptop that goes dark. So yesterday they fixed it, but this morning as the minister was giving her speech, then it started to get dark. So they are with me, they are fixing it. So they are asking for maybe for the next 5 to 7 minutes working on it, and then after that I'll be able to present. So we send a request that DFD to start before us if the chairperson will permit that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's allow you to do that, Advocate Cambus. Are you all by yourself? Or are you?
Thank you, Chair. There is someone who's going to be joining me soon, Chair. So we will be two. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Over to you then. Can flight your presentation. You are allowed to do so. We'll see that particular person when she joins or he joins. We'll acknowledge him or her by that time. Over to you for now. The presentation.
Chairperson.
Hello.
I think the justice made a request that the DFD must start since they are experiencing a difficulty. So I think the Department of DSD would start with their presentation while they are fixing their problem.
Does it mean that it is dark for the presentation, or does it mean it's dark for their videos to open up?
Chair, they cannot connect at all. They cannot share the screen from their side. So that's why they made that request for DSD to start while they are fixing that problem. And then it will allow the minister, while she's here, to just be able to be with the department, because the minister is still here, Minister Sukicha. So I advise that we start with DSD. That's just my advice.
Acting DG, isn't it?
May I then request, because I know our presentation. The reason why I was hanging around going that the cabinet committee was wanted to discuss it, maybe the best thing for me is to go back into the meeting, because I know my presentation has been done by the department. I've gone through it and I've engaged with the department. I will come back to listen to justice, because I'm more interested also on what justice is going to be presenting.
Okay, Minister. Acting DG,
thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Again, good morning to all honorable members in the room. I would then request my colleagues to let the slide the presentation, and we will start with the presentation. Thanks for the opportunity once again to present to the committee. It was a very important topic, as Richard indicated. It's something that requires serious talk to a few things. I'd like to start with just two aspects to the presentation. If we could go, I think the presentation outline, we can go to the next slide. Please, can you make it full screen? Right, if we could go to the next slide, go straight to slide number three. I think the presentation outline is pretty clear. Essentially, just talks to the flow of the presentation, and we'll try and be very quick. The bulk of our intervention in this morning's meeting will really focus on the programs, interventions, and of course the impact, including the data, as well as the collaboration that we have with various government departments. So we'll talk to that as we go through the presentation, and we'll focus largely on that. Let me start by saying that the murder of a child in the country is not only a gross violation of the Constitution, but a miscarriage of valuable contribution which that child was going to make the betterment of the country and the world as a whole, but of course also to their respective families. I must also indicate that violence against children cannot be tolerated. There's a need for everyone in the country to join forces and to stop the brutality against children. Now, our approach to addressing children's matters, particularly when it comes to child protection, is that everybody has a role and responsibility. So children's business should be everybody's business. And where it is essential that child protection stakeholders, including government, civil society organizations, community members, traditional leaders, parents, caregivers, even business, and even various sectors of society, including academia, have an important responsibility to take when it comes to addressing issues of children. Essentially, what we are talking about the future of the country, we have to pay attention to that. And I must just indicate that one of the core aspects that we implore as a Department of Social Development is throughout our programs, we actually co-create with children. So make sure that children are a greater part of the development of our programs and the implementation of our programs. In fact, what we also do is we have child ambassadors which are across the country and various provinces, and we utilize them to be part of not just the co-creation but also the implementation of our program. We'll demonstrate this a little bit later in the presentation. Can I just also state, Chair, that the Constitution in the Bill of Rights states that every child has the right to be protected from maltreatment, neglect, abuse, or degradation. May I add also the right to life? And I think, in addition, the Children's Act, Section 38, further affirms these rights and gives effect to the constitutional obligation to report incidences of child abuse and services to care and protection of children. Despite these legislative provisions, cases of violence against children and gender-based violence reportedly worsened during COVID-19, and the president has also called the gender-based violence in Maine as a second pandemic in the country. And as the minister indicated, that research really indicates that one in three women experience gender-based violence, whilst one in five children under the ages of 18 experience some form of sexual abuse. Now, the neglect and the abuse of children is manifested, amongst other things, in the increasing numbers of child pregnancy or children falling pregnant. And you would have heard alarming statistics that have been revealed not so long ago, including last year, actually, around the number of children that were pregnant throughout the year last year. And unacceptably high levels of teenage pregnancy in South Africa is seen as an infringement of the rights of the child, especially the girl child. And children falling pregnant are at risk. Amongst these, medical, social, and emotional problems in comparison to adult mothers. And majority of these children drop out of school and remain trapped in poverty. It's therefore important that to address the problem of teenage pregnancy as this contributes to the promotion and protection of the rights of the child and in the long run breaks the cycle of poverty. But let me just talk to that briefly, because it is a very important aspect that we are equally concerned about in the country. Now, the department, we do derive our mandate from Section 28, as I indicated, and 28.1 and 28.2 of the Constitution. And largely, we've also ratified both the African Union as well as UN instruments
in particular the AU Charter on the Rights of the Child, as well as the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Must I just also indicate that the Child Justice Act, I think Section 2, assists us, enables us to protect children in conflict with the law, but also children who may have committed murders against other children. So we implore those laws accordingly. As a department, we are strengthening our existing provisions, particularly as it relates to response, care, and support services in a way that is much more victim-centric or survivor-focused, and of course with the provision of psychosocial support and informed to facilitate recovery and healing. This is not only based on our core mandate, which is to provide psychosocial support, but also in line with the National Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, specifically Pillar 4, which is response care. So our extension of psychosocial support is also to children as well as their families, and also women in this case. Then, if I could just also indicate, we can move to, oh yes, this slide. Violence against children and gender-based violence issues, as we call it, I've highlighted this. And I think this calls for much more consistent effort, not just by government, but by all citizens of society, much more consistent approach and a much more robust approach to addressing these issues around children. You'll recall, Chair, that during COVID, our understanding in terms of the statistics that we have was that we received a high increase of gender-based violence, but also violence against children. That seems to have continued, as I indicated in the statistics that were released last year. Scourge of violence against children in South Africa continues to have a negative impact on children and families and rates of abuse at an alarming rate, which of course specific reports of the death of children largely happening within the hands of parents and caregivers. We find that a lot of the cases that are reported are largely in rural areas, peri-urban areas and townships in the main. Not to say that it doesn't happen in fluid areas, of course it does, but the bulk of the cases are in these areas. But also what we're finding is that a bulk of the cases that are also reported are largely among family members and within households that are taking this. So that is a great concern for us. I think just to also indicate that violence undermines social and economic development, and I think the Minister spoke to this, and reinforces the intergenerational cycle of poverty and inequality, and continues to impede progress towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, our National Development Plan, and indeed the realization of human rights, and of course also violates actually the rights that are enshrined in the Constitution overall. So that was just, you know, we can go to the next slide. I'll ask Isabella to take us through this slide onwards, and then we will come in at the end to wrap up once we've dealt with the program. As I indicated, we focus on the programs and the various interventions that we have that we've implemented in this one. So Isabella, you can come in on this slide. Isabella?
Hello?
Yes, proceed, please, Isabella.
Hi, Isabella. Where are you? Maybe she should log out and log in again.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members of the committee, colleagues who are here. I just want to take from the meeting, but before I start, I just want to indicate that we are responding to the brief by the portfolio committee where they requested us to come and brief them on violence and murder against children with specific focus on the mandate with GDPR and the about the kinds of cases registered. You know, there's record of child abuse and neglect cases that we reported to date with more than 17,400 with Western Cape and housing and children. Next slide, please. Okay, I think there's a slight problem with them, but I think we get in there. Now, just to indicate that the statistics that I presented to, it involves, you know, the forms of abuse, violence against children, killing children, and the definition thereof is physical, which includes killing, injury, or abuse, neglect, or negligent treatment, maltreatment, or exploitation, including sexual abuse. That's what it refers to. Now, when we move to the member California, I'm very sorry, I still don't think there's technical issues with this name, and it should check out from here. And if you allow me.
Chairperson.
What is the problem with Isabel? Isabel? Hello.
Chairperson, am I audible now?
Yes, you are. But you broke.
Hello?
What? Yes?
Am I audible, Chairperson?
I hear you now. Continue, Isabel.
Hallelujah.
My apologies. Let me just resolve this matter, please. Just a second, Honorable
Chair.
Apologies, Chair.
They are not right.
Chair, apologies. We had a bit of a challenge with various officers that we moved in between today. So that's part of the reason we're having the challenge. We've just asked them to move to a different office where there's more stability. There is a bit of a challenge with stability here in the department. And it's a serious challenge that we continue to face. My sincere apologies. If I could just get just a minute. And we'll then resume.
Meanwhile, can I also say that Honorable Stock has requested to be excused by 11, understanding that there are some sort of many duties that we are supposed to do, You are being excused, Honorable Tehang, when the time comes.
Chair, can you hear us now? Are we audible?
Yes, Chair. Hello.
No, it's fine. I also wanted to record two apologies I've received from Member Bilangulu. She's got a challenge she's attending to, a family that was murdered in the Limpopo. She's attending to that issue, as well as Super. She has a prior commitment. Those are the two apologies I've received. Thank you very much.
Okay, Lindy. Over to you, Department.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's available for speech at the present time.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry about what happened.
No. Chairperson, we're waiting for you.
Can you hear us now? Chair, can you hear? Hello?
Chairperson, about what happened. Am I audible now? Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I want to check if I'm audible. Hello?
Are you audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to start on slide 7 with Acting DJ left. The statistics, you know, in terms of the crimes against women and children. And here the statistics that we got is from, is the recent statistics we got.
Where is that slide? Stephen, where is that slide? I don't see any slide.
All right. Wait.
Host, can the host allow me to share the presentation? Okay, so do a share. Through you, Chair, you can share.
Are you
I think we're good now, Chair. This presentation is on the screen.
Okay, Chairperson, I will refer to slide number 7, you know, on the statistics. Statistics on selected crimes against women and children, with specific reference to murder, attempted murder, and assault. And this is the recent statistics from SARS. When you look at the figures, I will focus on children more because it has got statistics for women and children. Now, in terms of the children statistics, we just see a decline, you know, a decrease in terms of the murder against children, which is at a percentage of minus 9.4%. And when we look at the attempted murder, Chairperson, which is quite concerning as we see an increase, it has increased by 23.9%. And issues of assault, you know, have decreased in terms of 0.4. Even though there is a decrease, it is a very concerning because we don't want to see children being murdered or being violated. So it's a very serious concern where all of us as different stakeholders need to ensure that we join our forces to deal with this brutality against children. So, Chairperson, I would want us to go to, as the minister has given you, to go straight, you know, to the programs, which begins to start at slide number 13, which DG has begun, you know, to sort of give an overview in terms of the programs that we are rendering. I must say, as my introductory remarks to this, to say that as the department, much as we respond and we care and we support, we emphasize also prevention because we need to ensure that we are proactive and we put up programs, you know, to ensure that our children do not find ourselves in the situation where they are violated in terms of sexual abuse or in terms of any violation. And also in terms of the matter. So we are going to present in terms of that area, the response, care support, and we're also going to present, you know, the prevention part. But I must say that we are not operating in isolation. The problem that we are dealing with is bigger than Department of Social Development. It's bigger than government itself. We are supposed work together, you know, as all the sectors, both government, NPO sector, private, you name everyone, this issue is everybody's business. And therefore, as the Department of Social Development, we are involved in initiatives that are aimed at ensuring that we keep violence against children, but we also keep the murders. We are currently implementing the intersectoral protocol on the management of child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. This is intersectoral in nature, and it has got all role players, you know, where we hold each other accountable in terms of the initiatives that are supposed to be implemented to ensure that, you know, our children are not violated. Now, in these instances, we've got your Department of Basic Education, we've got Department of Justice, we've got Department of Health, you know, all those various departments are part of this that are reporting on all the interventions that have been put in place to ensure that we really deal with this matter. But also having said that, we've got other initiatives that are intersectoral in nature. We've got integrated school health programs where every department has got its role to play in ensuring that, you know, we deal with issues that might pose a risk, you know, to children, and that might make children vulnerable. And we also ensure that we come up with crime prevention and programs that will ensure that we deal with prevention issues before, you know, the children found themselves, you know, in the compromised situation. We look at, you know, all the programs that we are dealing with, the family preservation programs. We know, Chairperson, that family is very critical. It's the primary socialization of individuals, but it's there to support its members. And I'm sure all of us can attest to the fact that, you know, the families are exposed and are vulnerable, and they really need to be empowered. And therefore, as the department, we focus on family preservation programs, such as your Sinovuyo, such as your Family Matters program, that empower families, you know, to be able to deal with risk behaviors in the family. But also, we know that, you know, it is very difficult to also raise adolescents, and it is important that we empower, you know, our families to deal with all the challenges that are faced in terms of raising, you know, our adolescents. And we know, Chairperson, that there is no formula in terms of raising a child. Whether you are educated or not, you know, it becomes a greatest challenge. And this department, you know, has gone, miles, you know, to ensure that they put programs in place to ensure that, you know, children are being protected. But children that are already in that situation, we also have alternative care, you know, where we ensure that children are being removed and are being put in a safe place. We've got your child and your care centers, and we've got your foster care, you know, placement that we are doing. Now, in next slide 14. about prevention programs. And I must indicate first that we are, as I said, we are also operating, you know, within other strategies, overall strategies of government. And in this case, with the last slide and the first slide, we are having national strategic plan, you know, for gender-based violence and femicide, which is being led by the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities. And as the Department of Social Development, we are leading Pillar 4, which I've spoken about in the previous slide, which we are doing very well, where we are trying to ensure that we respond when children and women are confronted with, you know, such situations. Now, in this slide is the slide that emphasizes prevention. And I must say that we have really made strides in terms of ensuring that we put programs in place that will really ensure that we deal with issues before they can be, they can affect children and make them, you know, get deeper into the system to avoid, you know, children getting into the system and being for us to render statutory services, which are quite expensive. Now, in this program, we strengthen delivery capacity in South Africa to roll out evidence-based prevention programs, and we ensure that we change behavior and social norms within key groups, such as your children of different age. You will see that we've got programs that, you know, are tailor-made, you know, to ensure that they respond to children of different ages. Now, when you look at this slide, we just outlined one of the some of the programs that we have, you know, and these programs, as I continue to present, you will see that we've got more programs. Some of them, they fall within a particular compendium, like we've got social behavioral change program that fall within a compendium program that needs to be implemented. Now, these ones that I'm talking about, we've got, you know, the 365 days that Minister has spoken about, and that we really need to intensify to ensure that we fight, you know, violence against children and matters that we are talking about. And we also target, you know, the hotspot areas that have been identified, you know, through GBV program. And those are the ones that we are targeting to raise awareness, because we are quite aware that there are quite a number of social skills that contribute towards violence against children. And as we look at substance abuse issues, and we also look at, as I said, strengthening families, because if the family, most of the children are being abused within families, and therefore we really need to ensure that we strengthen those interventions that are targeted to the families, so that we can be able to empower our families and also empower these children, so that they can be able, you know, to have that self-esteem and be able, you know, to be confident, you know, to deal with the matters that confront them. We've got RISIHA. This is a program at Chairperson that is really progressing very well, that we are implementing, and it's implemented across all provinces in the country. And it provides a range of services, such as your reproductive sexual health services, such as your school after school care programs, such as nutrition, because we know most of the children are impoverished and they come from, you know, families that they cannot be able to afford. So this program that we are talking about is being rendered, you know, through drop-in centers. I think in the country currently we have 1,200 drop-in centers where this program is being implemented, Jefferson. And that's moving this slide. We've implemented in the drop-in centers in more than 1,200 drop-in centers. And currently, Chairperson, we have reached more than 448,000 children, you know, through this program. And it is making a big difference, because children are in safe environments. You know, after school, they are not loitering the streets. They are in safe environments. There are social service practitioners that are employed within these drop-in centers that are assisting, you know, that are assisting the children and facilitating the programs that are being implemented. So we ensure that, you know, they also when children are being, you know, safe, put in safe environments and are protected against, you know, violence and against murder. So, Chairperson, I must say that in every platform that we have with province, we make sure that we hold each other accountable really, really working. Let me know your program, Chairperson. We are building strong families that care, protect, support each other. And as I said, our families are very, very vulnerable. And we've been able to reach out to more than 66,800 parents and caregivers during the current financial year that we are talking about. And I must say that even though the programs, our programs that we are implementing, they take long for us to be able, you know, to measure impact. But we begin to see, you know, some positive results coming out of this program. We have seen, you know, positive interaction and relationship between parents and caregivers. And we are also encouraging, you know, the relationship between the children and their fathers, because we know that we've got absent fathers, as it is a cry, you know. And I must say to a person that it is not like all is well. We also admit that we still need to improve. There's lots that needs to be done. There's still some communities where these programs are not available. And that is why we are also welcoming, you know, partnership with other stakeholders that are willing to assist us. But I must say that NGOs are very helpful in terms of ensuring that we roll out some of these programs, and because we as the department cannot do it on our own. Our government officials are doing their part, but they are working very closely with NGOs. We are funding these NGOs so that they can be able, you know, to assist us in terms of rolling this one. That is why we see this high number of people that we have reached, you know, through the programs that we are talking about. So there's a positive interaction that we have seen in terms of this program. Asipulule, very critical program, which is a program that is meant to ensure that we lobby, you know, the religious sector so that they can be able, you know, to participate on issues that affect children. So it is important, Chairperson, that I should indicate that all the programs that we are talking about are led by our political heads, minister and deputy minister. And maybe that is why we are seeing that, you know, we are able to see impact. We are seeing interest being gained, you know, by the communities and other people, because there is leadership at that level. They are taking charge of this program. So Asipulume is one of the programs that is very critical. We mobilize the religious leaders because we know that it's an every individual belongs to a religious organization. And therefore, these people, when they talk, they've got influence in the communities. They are able, you know, to influence their members to ensure that, you know, these issues of violence against children are being addressed in different platforms. Can we move maybe to slide number 19? I want to talk about the compendium of social behavioral programs, the compendium of social behavioral programs. Jefferson, I've spoken about those programs in the previous slide, which are part of the social behavioral programs. But there is, you know, those special programs where we have developed, you know, guidelines and programs in terms of, you know, the compendium of programs that we have, and they attend different programs that we are talking about. These programs, as I must indicate, that they are interrelated, even though they are different, but they are interrelated, and they target individuals, families, and communities. And it is important, Chairperson, to indicate that at the center of these programs are girls and young women. These are implemented within same communities. We are not saying we implement
recording
one program in this community. We are not saying we implement one this program in one community, but all this, the compendium of programs that I'm
recording in progress
in the communities so that they can make maximum impact. Now, we have been able, you know, to implement these communities in the 8 provinces except in Western Cape, because Western Cape felt that maybe they've got the programs, you know, that are dealing with the issues. So we are funding this program through the Equitable Share, which means that there is funding that has been set aside, you know, by provincial treasuries to ensure that these programs are sustainable. And they are available in all the districts. However, Chairperson, I think it is important for me to say that
recording stopped. We have seen USAID, you know, having interest in terms of ensuring that they partner with us so that we can upscale, you know, in the communities that we do not have. And it is important that all these programs, to indicate that all these programs that I am talking about have got manuals. And therefore, we are working together, as I said, with 42 NPOs, you know, that we are funding, that are implementing this program, you know, across, you know, the country, as I have said. I must say that there are positive behavior change outcomes since the implementation of the program. And we are saying this, we are confident to say this, because there was a study that was we are starting to see increasing knowledge, which really impact on the positive behavior of you know, the people that are accessing this program. Next slide, please. Now, I want to unpack these programs one by one because they are very important. I want to start with community capacity enhancement, which is known as CCE. It engages communities through dialogue to assist them to understand their own problems and come up with their own solutions. Like, for example, the community may dialogue, and they also talk about, you know, the child killings, and they try to find solutions within themselves in terms of how to deal with that. They may say that, okay, let us try to resuscitate neighborhood programs in the communities. Let's try and ensure that we've got our own Makuta and Imbizo so that we can tap on each other. Or let us try, you know, and come up with a certain initiative that will assist us in terms of identifying
taking
believers, so that of adolescents, so that they can be able to ground, you know, these children to be, to have self-esteem and be able, you know, to make the informed decision, not being influenced by anybody. And we know, Chairperson, that our adolescents like to experiment. You know, sometimes they attempt, as you know, to get involved, have relationships with older men. And what does it mean? Sometimes it results to killing. In other instances, it's trafficking, you know. You know, so if we empower our children, we ground the family, we are able to ensure that our children are very family types of values, how they are socialized, you know, and the issues of teen pregnancy, teenage pregnancy, because they won't go and experience. Will be, the family will be able to talk about these issues, you know, of health, reproductive with the children. So the parent is, you know, is really, I mean, the program is really meant to equip parents to deal with such risks. The main champion, next slide, next, please. The another important programs, I will group this one, programs that we are implementing as a department and are very influential. And Chairperson, mind you, this is the compendium. You know, I'm still talking to the compendium. The main champion in change and the boys champion. The men and boys champion in change. Now, we will not win the war, Chairperson, on violence against women and children and child killing if men and boys are left behind. They need to be involved. And that is the reason why we are also strengthening this program and ensuring that we upscale them to reach, you know, to our boys and men. And the men should be involved by being that they are the champions of prevention of violence against women and children. And they are holding each other accountable through these programs. And they also, you know, talk about their parental role and encouraging them, each other, to be present in the life of their children. If you can just imagine a boy child who has been raised with, without a father. So these men champion in them, they are there, you know, to encourage each other and hold each other accountable to ensure that, you know, they are present in the lives of their children, and they protect their families, and they protect the children, and they raise the boy children, you know, socialize the boy children in a way that they will really be able not to, also be perpetrators in future, you know. So far, Chairperson, with regards to the men's champion, we've got programs such as your parliament, and we've been able to host for parliament, and we have been able to also host 24 district parliament, and we also have been able to raise to host traditional men's parliaments that are 11, and at an average of 250 people attending this parliament. And the very same thing with the boys, we've got boys assemblies where these boys, you know, and empower each other, and they are also empowered. And we've been able to host 10 national and district boys assemblies at an average of 500 people per boys assembly. And I must say that in every program that we are implementing, MPOs are also there. We're working with MPOs. And we're also working with other government departments, because issues of health, we are not expert in that. You know, as we deliver this program, there is an intersectoral approach that we are applying, you know, to ensure that, you know, our program is responsive. You know, all the programs that I've spoken are responsive, you know, to the needs of the targets that we are talking about. I'm not going to talk about CHOMI. CHOMI is for little children. And it's a very interesting, you know, those little ones, as they talk, you'll get excited. You'll really wonder how much they know about this issue, you know. And we recently hosted a seminar for children between 10 and 11. And as I say, our political leaders are always in the forefront of, you know, these programs that we are talking about. And maybe that's why, you know, they are thriving, because, you know, we've got a political leadership. I must say, Chairperson, as I said, most still need
them. We empower children in this program, Chairperson, you know, to ensure that they put high levels of self-esteem. And as we do that, they are less likely to become victims of violence because they're able to stand for themselves. They know them, they know what they need. They know, you know, how to deal with, you know, the challenges of life that they are encountering. Now, it creates a safe and enabling environment for children, the euro that I've spoken about, and they discuss all issues that affect them. And so far, Chairperson, we have reached to what we have reached 246,204 children through this program. Chairperson, let's go to slide number 30, because the Kimonda, there are quite a number of programs that we are talking about. Now this slide, Chairperson, we call it G2G program. G2G means government to government programs, where the government of South Africa is partnering with government of USA, United of yes, USA, in implementing, you know, the program. And we are not looking at new programs, we are strengthening or we are upscaling, you know, the programs that we are currently having. Your YOLO, your CHOMI, you know, your DREAMS. Those are the programs that we are focusing in. And so far, Chairperson, we have been able, you know, to, with this partnership, we have been able, you know, to implement in three provinces, okay? Yes, and Gauteng, KZN, and Free State. But now, when you look at the green part is where we are already implementing in the city of Johannesburg, at Kuleni, and in KZN we are implementing at Thekwini, Uthukela, and Zululand, and in Free State we are at Thabo Mofutsa, Futanyana, and Lejolifutsa, and those are the numbers of children that we have of children that we have reached so far in terms of our implementation. Now the brown one is where we want to scale up and expand. We are working together with USAID to ensure that we expand, you know, to the Northwest and to Western Cape. And I think the planning here is at an advanced stage. And we will also now include children with disabilities and you know, focusing also more on violence against children. And recently, Chairperson, I must say that Minister launched the disruptive harm study with key resolutions to increase awareness, you know, to prevent child sexual abuse. So those are the partnerships that we are having, you know, internationally. And we see them, and this is the partnerships that we are having with UNICEF. And these are some of the initiatives that assist us, you know, to ensure that we maximize the impact. Because what is critical is that as we partner with these with us, we also benefit in terms of achieving other priorities of government in terms of job creation. Because even with the GCC program, we have been able to create jobs, because as we increase the number of programs, they also give us capacity, you know, to deliver on the our targets that we have to achieve. Now slide number 31. Still on the G2G program. This is an illustrative of where we started, you know, with this program that has been in 2023. And it reflects, you know, the achievements, because when we are partnering with international, we also have targets that we are supposed to reach. And when you look at, you know, the trend, we've been overachieving the target. And I must say that, Chairperson, even though we evaluated, we had an evaluation study on the SPC, I think we need to also intensify and strengthen, you know, our evaluation on impact. I think we are not doing well in that regard, so that we can even hear the beneficiaries on the ground about what is it that they are really getting from our interventions, whether it is positive or it is negative. So we want to strengthen Chairperson, after we have implemented the G2G, we want to come up with an evaluation so that we can be able to evaluate, you know, the impact of our intervention. Now getting to the slide number 32, when we talk about impact, I've been highlighting some of the impact in communities that we have seen, and that we have heard, you know, the community members talking about, that it created safer spaces for children and reduced vulnerability to violence and murder. We know that we still experience, you know, the numbers or the numbers of murders, simply because we're not implementing this program in all the communities. We acknowledge, and hence we are saying that our partnership, you know, with private sector, our partnership with international organization or whoever wants to partner with us will assist us, you know, to identify those communities and be able to reach out to, so that we can really see an impact in terms of what we are doing. And it will lead to improved ability to identify and solve the problems children and youth face, skills for coping with difficult emotions, better communication within the children and youth caregivers, and enhanced knowledge on sexual reproductive health, such as prevention of HIV and AIDS. I must say that even though the G2G emphasizes more on HIV, but when you look at the program, we've made it in such a way that it really caters for all, you know, the vulnerable groups, to really for, ensure that it deals with the social ills. And maybe if we keep on referring to HIV, it's not like the programs are only centered around HIV. So they are meant to change the gender norms, you know, within the society and within even the families and individuals themselves, because most of the time we are subjected to that. So, Chairperson, I think I will pause, and I recommend that you know the programs that we have implemented, but also you note and consider our presentation where we have been able to try and cover the brief as set by the portfolio committee. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. That then brings us to the end of our presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim Dichi. Let's check.
Recording in progress.
Do we have to also include the Department of Justice and discuss it once? What are the members saying? Yes, Honorable Pandemic.
Hello, my chairperson. Good morning. I'm sorry, I raised my hand because, in fact, on the program, it showed that we would be engaging with each presentation. So I'd, in fact, raised my hand to ask some questions. But I don't think there's any harm in taking the second presentation as well, although I am ready to ask questions.
Okay, you can make the questions then. Department of Justice already for us?
Thank you, Chair. We are ready.
Okay. You advocate Kambula.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. If you may be given the... Go to the Bluetooth menu on your smartphone and select it from the list. May we be given the right to share?
Yes, you can do that.
Okay. I forget I'm willing to post. She can share. Unless there's somebody else, I must make a call.
Advocate Kambule, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. As I'm trying to share, it reflects that, okay, now I have been given the right. Are you able to see the presentation, Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Let me just start it from the beginning. Thank you, Chair. As I have said in the beginning, that I am advocate praise the
messages. My apologies, I just want to move this. Thank you. Our focus is primarily going to be responding to the request that we received from the portfolio committee, and mainly then, but before I can go on with the presentation, I would like just to sensitize the committee that as a department, we do not keep the statistics that involve children yet. We do have what we call the integrated case management system, which is a national repository that captures all criminal matters that are
recording
started by our lower courts. And but we are in a process, is a system that gets upgraded annually, and now we are in a process of ensuring that we capture the disaggregated
recording
data
in progress
of children, particularly in murder cases and in others. But I would like just to say that you know, this, the ICMS is got a number of modules, and some of the modules do capture the statistics of children that I will be sharing right now. So these are the pieces of legislation that we can say that are primary in terms of the protection of the rights of children as encapsulated by our constitution in section 28 of the constitution. We have the Domestic Violence Act. I will be sharing the amendments that we have done, and the Children's Act is led by the Department of Social Development, my apologies, and we are there as a department. We are providing the court space for the implementation of this legislation. And then we have the Criminal Law, Special Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act, the one that was also amended. It forms part of the 3GBV Amendment Act that came into operation, some of them, but I will be speaking on them. And then we have the Child Justice Act that speaks to the children who are in conflict of law. And then we have the Prevention and the Combating of Trafficking in Persons Act. So these are the primary pieces of legislation in our country that are protecting the rights of children in terms of crime. Then you can have your Maintenance Act and others and so on. But I focus my presentation on the ones that are relating to crime, since the presentation is about violence and murder. I would also like to say this, that as a department, we are leading the intersectoral implementation of all pieces of legislation except for the Children's Act. And also, it's so important for the committee to know that we also have the intersectoral committee of sexual offenders, and there's also another one, which is for the management of child justice, where then the GTs converge and look into all these issues that relate to the implementation of the Child Justice Act and also of the sexual offenders legislation. And the DG for Social Development is part of these engagements. Now, as I have said, Chair, that I'm going to zoom straight into the 3GBV Amendment Act, because when we were amending these pieces of legislation, we had the rights of a child in mind, and you will see it as I move on with the presentation. First, it is important just to say that I'm going to start then with the criminal and related. I'm going to start, with the Domestic Violence Amendment Act. So this is an act then that is that started to, that is the principal act, it started to be implemented on the 16th of December 1999. So it has been in the space of implementation for quite a long time. So for us then, it was so important that we do some kind of an overhaul review of the act to see as to what are
the Fijos that are there? What are the Latinas that are there in this area that will need them to be addressed so as to increase then its impact and its effectiveness? So the first thing that we have done here, we have my screen. Yes, we go back. My apologies, Chair. We have a similar situation with TSC, where our system was hacked. It gives us a lot of problems. But now it's moving. Okay, the domestic rights. So we have introduced a number. We looked into the acts of domestic violence, which actually constitute what we call domestic violence. And I would like to say, Chair, that in the globe, our domestic violence is one piece of legislation that has one of the broadest definition of domestic violence. So we added more of the acts of domestic violence, and we ensure that as we are crafting them, they are easy to capture by people who are walking on the streets. So we have now included the exposure of a child to domestic violence as an act of domestic violence. What does that mean is that a child now may go to court and make an application for domestic, for protection order, has a right to go to court and approach our court and apply for protection order. And this then, it will be on this ground that I have been exposed to domestic violence. And we also then, it's an act then that actually gives a children a locus standi to go to court and actually apply for protection order, whether they are assisted or not. And because we do understand that some of the violations that children experience are at the hands of their parents, at the hands of their guardians. So now we have given them that local standard to go to court and make applications without assistance if that needs to be. Then we're also introduced then, this is a provision that has already been there, that third-party applications are permitted, meaning that a person who has an interest in the well-being of a child may apply for protection order on behalf of that child. And that also includes social workers as well. So they are given then the right to go to court and apply for protection order on behalf of the child. We have also now included then a provision that will be giving children right to legal services when they go and make application. If the respondent has got an attorney during the application for the protection order, then the child will be entitled to get legal aid services. Now, with this Amendment Act for Domestic Violence, the standardism is a crime. We have criminalized it, meaning that we have placed a legal obligation, not a responsibility, but a legal obligation that any or every other person to report an incident of domestic violence, even if it's a suspicion, to report it to police and also to social workers. We said that social workers are the police. And it is a provision then that criminalizes the failure to do so. Then we have also then in the same act included the safety monitoring notice, because we have to look at what is it that we can do, because people have been saying, and it is what we have also been experiencing in our court, that some people would die having the protection order. So then we say that what is the measure in protective measure that we can introduce so as to address that. So now we introduce the safety monitoring notice. So if a child goes to court and says that it is mommy, it is daddy who is abusing me and I'm staying with them, so in terms of this act, then that child will be issued with a safety monitoring notice that will go then to the station commander, and the station commander is required by the court to release them
hands in the protection of the child during that time. So the child can apply for the safety monitoring and notice simultaneously with the protection order, or even after the protection order has been granted, is allowed to do so. Then, as you know, that these are the children, so they do not know the system, and we don't want them to even know that they are in court. So we have introduced then in one piece of legislation amongst the 3DBC Amendment Act. Now we extended the intermediary services to civil proceedings, because when you go to court and apply for a protection order, it is a civil proceeding. So previously, we were only having intermediary services in criminal matters and also in terms of the Children's Act, because the Children's Act also has a provision that requires us to provide intermediary services. But now we have made them to be available also in civil proceedings to accommodate children. We have also had a provision now that when the presiding officer is hearing the application made by the child or on behalf of the child to apply for the protection order, and then realizes that this child is in need of care. So now what we are saying is that the court proceedings now move from being the domestic violence proceedings to get into the children's proceedings, so as to stop then, you know, that referral of a child now to a children's court. So we are saying that the presiding officer now converts the proceedings into the children's court proceedings and ensure that there's an investigation if it needs to be done in terms of the Children's Act, but we have sort of allowed that process of having them that interface between the domestic violence and proceedings and the children's court proceedings. We also have a provision here, Chairperson, and the reason for us to include this provision, it is because we have to clean up the system of secondary traumatization and at all the service points. So there was a time when we were saying that we create an offense out of what we call secondary traumatization, but that process then could not get to, because we were looking at a number of things, the definition of secondary traumatization and all of that. But now we said that in the meantime, apologies, Chair. I thought that it was off. So now in the meantime, what we are saying is that we identified a number of stakeholders, including DSD, that the DG of DSD must issue directives, and those directives are the directives for the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act by the Department of Social Development. And within the directives, there must be provisions that will be stipulating adequate disciplinary measures that will be taken against non-compliance and also against secondary traumatization at service points that will be experienced by the victims of domestic violence. And in terms of the Act, then, I hope that this has already been done, because it says that the national directives must be submitted by the Minister of Social Development to Parliament, and not later than the 24th of January 2022. Now, moving then to the next Amendment Act, which is the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act. This one, we're looking at the Criminal Procedure Act. Remember that women marched in 2018 and they were marching against issues of bail, issues of all these systematic inefficiencies that one would find in the court system and also in the criminal justice system as a whole. So now, what we have done with this Act, we have introduced now the virtual proceedings. And these virtual proceedings will also then be assisting children to testify in the safety of their homes, and they may testify in shelters, they may testify Now, as I've mentioned, I've already mentioned the intermediary services that are now extended into civil proceedings. And now coming to bail, there are provisions that we have included in bail, all right, in bail provisions that will accommodate a child. So now we are saying that no bail in cases of rape or compelled rape involving, amongst other victims, a child victim, all right, and a victim with disability, or a victim who is or was in a domestic relationship without a child. So children then here are protected, unless then the circumstances of justice will permit otherwise. Now, we also say that no police bail as well, no police bail, all right, so I'm removing what I said at the end, because here this provision is saying absolutely no police bail, all right, because previously you would find that a person would go to police station to lay a criminal charge, and that would be outside the court date or outside the court hours, and then soon thereafter people will see that person walking on the street. It is because in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, police were allowed to release the suspect or the accused person, to release the accused person on bail. But now we are saying that no more police bail at all, in all circumstances, whether it is a case of rape, it's a case of compelled rape, and a case that involves a child, where the child is a victim of a sexual offense, or a child has a domestic relationship with the accused person. Absolutely no bail, no police bail. And we are also saying that no police bail in cases of assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm perpetrated against a child under the age of 16 years, or a child 16 or 17 years of age, and the accused is 4 years older. That is between whether you have a situation where the perpetration of the crime is between children. And also then we say that then, I think I have mentioned this one, that when a child is in need of care, then we have to switch them to the Children's Act. Now, the same act, then we have to toughen sentences, because in 2018, there was also an outcry against the sentences that are imposed by our court. Now, we see that life imprisonment may be imposed, because the imposition of a sentence is a discretionary matter, all right? It's the magistrate that, or the presiding officer, that has a discretion which sentence to impose. But now what we're seeing is that life imprisonment may be imposed on the accused person, depending on the circumstances of the case, on an accused person convicted of murder of a child, rape of a child, rape of a domestic relationship, gang rape, serial rape, and even femicide. All right, I have put in here femicide, but in terms of our law, we are calling it murder. So femicide, then it is the unlawful killing of a female person. So that female person also includes then a female child, and also the domestic homicide. Domestic homicide, then you find those offenses, those matters that occur in
So now we were looking actually on the National Register for Sex Offenders, and because women were saying, and also the child sector saying that we need just to expand the operation of this act in terms of its protection. So right now, what the amendment that has been done, which is already in operation, is that any person who is convicted of a sexual offense, doesn't matter which one, then upon conviction, your particulars go straight to the National Register for National Register for Sex Offenders. Previously, this was a register that was only incorporating a conviction where the perpetrator, where the accused person is convicted of a sexual offense that involves a child or a person with mental disability. But now it's about all victims of crime, irrespective of the age or the mental status of the victim. All of them, the convicted sex offenders, they are registered. Now, a registered sex offender, in terms of this provision, is prohibited from working at any environment that would give that person direct access to vulnerable persons. For the very first time in our country, it defined with a piece of legislation that actually defines who constitute what we call vulnerable persons. So vulnerable persons right now relate to children and persons with mental disabilities, and persons with a physical disability, sensory disability, and also older persons who are living in institutions that are offering them those services that they need, meaning that in shelters or in institutions for older persons. I know that DSD does have that, and those infrastructures. And then also then women who are 25 years and below, who are registered in tertiary institutions, are also protected and covered under vulnerable persons. So in a nutshell, those are the persons now that constitute what we call, in terms of our law, vulnerable persons. So now, this act requires all persons who are working with children, directly with children, meaning that also the social workers must be vetted against the NRSO, that is the National Register for Sex Offenders. And this is compulsory, Chair. So this includes then in terms of the DSD space, the social workers, the probation officers, and the staff that is working at shelters, and also the intermediaries, because social workers can also offer intermediary services in terms of the determination, of the categories of persons who can be appointed as intermediaries. We have included the social workers and also social workers who are out of the system of care, forgot the word. And so they are also then allowed, you know, to provide intermediary services in terms of this act. Now, failure of an employer to vet the employees who are expected in terms of this act to be vetted amounts to a crime. So what it means is that if the DG of social development fails to have the social workers and the probation officers and also those who are working at shelters and all others who are exposed or having direct access within DSD to children and vulnerable persons, so including the older persons, as I have mentioned. So we'll be liable to committing a crime, and we'll be liable upon conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 7 years, or both a fine and such imprisonment. So we have started to engage a chairperson with the Department of Social Development, because the act then makes it very clear. It says that the National Register for Sex Offenders receives the application, meaning that it is not the
the registrar that goes to the employers or the employees who are expected to be registered. But then because we belong to one government, then we have been having interactions with the different departments to say that your DG will be charged. He's committing a crime if your people are not registered. Now, we also, in terms of this accident, we are saying no base genderism in cases of sexual offences perpetrated against a child, and we have also created a punishable offence out of that. So, meaning that as a social worker, as an other person living in South Africa, irrespective of whether you are a national or non-national, if you suspect that there is a crime of sexual violence perpetrated against a child, you must report that. So in 2020-2021, we experienced that there was a report that was made that 60% child pregnancies increased by 60%. So what it means is that then this provision, that is Section 54, is to be implemented. So we are trying even to stop that a neighbor would see that this child is 12 years old, is 13 years old, and is pregnant. So then the neighbor has a legal obligation to report this offense. But in this instance, we say that it must be reported not to the social workers, but straight to the police. Now, coming then to the programmatic interventions that we have in the department. First, I'm going to just be focusing first on the children's court, as I have indicated that our role in terms of assisting the Department of Social Development with the implementation of this legislation is to provide them with the court space. And it must be the court space that will also provide a private justifying services for the child, all right, so that there are intermediary services that are provided to the child. Because this provision also has a provision that says that, I mean, this act is a provision that requires intermediary services. So that is actually the basket of applications, as you are seeing there on the screen, that then our courts are considering. But then we as a department then we provide the administrative support in terms of the implementation of this act. The primary stakeholder are the judiciary, are the presiding officers, that is the judiciary. So then we went to them for this presentation to ask as to, are there any challenges that you are experiencing as you are working very closely with the social workers. So they reported that they experienced in certain cases a delayed submission of the social work investigation report, and in some instances, then the report would be submitted with incomplete information. They also reported then the shortages of intermediary services, and we are requesting a chairperson. It's actually a request that we have already made to the department in one of the federal committees that we have, that is the GG's Interfederal Committee, that we are requesting the social development to provide us, to assist us with intermediary services, because our capacity as a department cannot, now that, especially now that it is expanded to civil proceedings, we will have shortage of staff. And some, they are saying that it is the non-submission or the late submission of foster care extension reported by social workers. But Chairperson, I would like also to indicate that the judiciary that I spoke with, they also said that generally they are happy with the services of the social workers, but it's only just those few things that they requested that we mentioned before this committee. Now, coming to sexual offences, what are the programs as a department that we are offering to children who are victims of sexual offences? We came up with a model, and I believe that Chairperson, you might have learned of it in the sexual offences court. It is their homegrown model, and many countries now and learning from South Africa. This is one of the interventions as a country that we need to be proud of and say that there is something that we are doing that is worthy of being adopted even by the progressive countries in terms of domestic violence. So countries are coming through to learn from us about this model. And I would say that Chairperson, like in December we had in Uganda that was here to learn about this model, and we also had in Trinidad and Tobago, and they came also to learn about it, and they are also incorporating it in their legislation, so as to incorporate it in their legal system. So what is this model all about? It is about ensuring that a child, when a child comes to court, it does not even feel that it's in the court space. So we sort of shield them from all these secondary traumatization that one may find when you come into our court system. So it is primarily meant to eliminate that secondary victimization, provide the status, especially the human capital, and also to improve the prosecution in cases that involve children and the adjudication thereof, and ensure that then the system is agile and it's also effective, and most importantly, that the outcome or the output is meant to prevent pedophilia and the repeat sex offending. So this is a basket then of support services that we are offering to children when they come to our court. So before they testify, they receive then the information services, and those information is the court preparation officer who is required then to contact the parent of the child and to check and just to let them to know what they will be expecting. And we provide them the private waiting area for the children, and we also provide the court preparation of a service which is primarily provided by NPA, the court preparation officer. It has the pre-trial emotional protection service, and also the post-trial emotional containment service, which is intended to ensuring that we don't take a child to court who is not emotionally ready to testify. So now we have injected the disability services so as to ensure that the model is disability centric, and we also provided in the court support services, the court accompaniment services. And I would like to say, Chairperson, that we also have social workers that provide the court accompaniment services for the department. Now, during the testimony, then you will find that we have then the language interpretation, the private testifying services, I will show you just shortly, and the use of the anatomically and directed dogs, which are the testimony assistive tools for the children, because some of the children do not know the language that relates then to sexual interaction, sexual activities, they don't know. So then we give them the dolls where then they are able then to demonstrate to the court what actually happened to them. And then after they have testified, then we provide them with a post-trial emotional containment server. And if they come to the system, we give them the services immediately so that they are able to have food and so they don't wait until the case is finalized. And we also have a referral system. And I would also like to say, Chairperson, this model now, it is in the regulations relating to sexual offences court. And when we were developing the regulations relating to sexual offences court, we had the participation of the Department of Social Development. So they are also part of this process, and they are providing the counseling services, the trauma debriefing, and so on. And then now this is all then the infrastructure that is there, but I will show you in terms of pictures. So you have the court. So in the court, then we've got three screens, and then there's one monitor that is close to the magistrate. And the reason for us to introduce that monitor, we want the magistrate to be able to see the demeanor of the child. If the child is tired, if the child wants to cry, and so on, then the court, then the proceedings then are adjourned. And rather than notifying time to rest and maybe interact with other children. So now the case, the proceedings are adjourned for the child, and then you have a nap within the court preparation, within the private testifying room. So in the waiting room for the children, we have made it then to have toys and all that, so they interact with other children. They don't really know that they are in court. And when they are in the private testifying room, it is the intermediary that will wear the earphones. And the children do not even know what they don't even hear a single word that comes from the court. And they are shielded from the physical interaction with the perpetrator. And then we also have in the children's waiting room, there's a sofa there that is designed for the parents to be able then to take care of their children when they are in court. And there we also have a bath fridge and so on, so that then they don't go out, and they have a microwave where they can warm their food and so on. Now, coming to the statistics, as I move very fast, the statistics now against children and sexual offences perpetrated against children, we are collecting that statistics. And we have learned that from the statistics, 90% of child sexual abuse occurs within domestic relationships. So now, with statutory rape, all right, so we have found then an increase, that is from April to December 2020, if you look, comparing this with the previous financial year, all right, we found there's an increase then of 3.12 of all registered cases of statutory rape. So what it means is that in South Africa, we have a problem. Children are increasingly becoming victims of statutory rape, which is a serious concern, Chairperson. Now, coming then to statutory sexual assault cases, we also registered an increase, and that's an increase of 1.59 of all the registered cases during the same period compared with the previous financial year, as you are seeing it on the screen. Now, I'm going to be giving you now like the global picture of the sexual offences registered during this period, and I would also like to say, Chairperson, minimal movement of people on the street because of the regulations for COVID-19 and the restrictions that were imposed. So meaning that many families, especially the elders, the parents, the visibility of parenting was increased at home. But Chairperson, we learned that even during that time, there was an increase, an escalation of the number of children who were exposed to statutory rape and also to other forms of sexual violence perpetrated against children. Now, this is that, now with the case, with the courts, our courts that are linked to the Tuduzela Care Centers, we have learned that the conviction rate is far better. It's 75.1, that is as at the 30th of June 2022. And if we are looking there, the global one, that is for the national one, even the courts that are not tied to the Tuduzela Care Centers, because as we know that Tuduzela Care Centers are currently 61 in the country. So the conviction rate there is 60.2. So what it means is that we need to increase those support services for the children because it increases their ability to perform better when there are witnesses in court. Now, let's get now to the Child Justice Court. Child justice then is about all those children who are perpetrating crime. All right? There is a bleak picture that is there. And it is not starting now, Chairperson. It is moving from one financial year to the next. And I think probably maybe this is the fourth financial year that we've been having this. Children, this is the top nine convictions, the ages of children registered during the previous financial year. And children, the top conviction of children, the top conviction registered against children is of rape. It's not of sexual offenses, all right? It's of the most serious sexual offense that you find in the family of sexual offenses that we have in our country. So what it means is this, the age of the perpetrator of gender-based violence and femicide in our country is getting younger and younger day by day. So it really needs then the intervention by all the stakeholders, including the civil society organizations. As I was listening to this presentation, I was thinking to myself that, you know, this program that social development has that is focusing on families, because we need to rehabilitate families. And if our focus is not on families, we are missing the point. So we need to restore the values of love, the values of protection, child protection, the values of respect, you know, for female population and so on within the family setup. And if we don't start there, because what builds the community started at the family setup. So we need them to have that program that they are having. I'm going to be liaising because I'm working very closely with social development colleagues that to see as to how as a Department of Justice can come in, all right, to assist and see as to where our role can be so as to intensify its impact in the country. And so if you look at the top three is rape, followed by housebreaking with intent to steal and theft, and one will be expecting that offense to be perpetrated by children because it's a property-related offense. So one will say, okay, it's poverty, father absenteeism, fatherhood absenteeism, and other social ills that the previous presenter mentioned. But murder, what can explain, what explanation that we can have for murder? For children in our country, children convicted of offenses to have that as the top three of the entire convictions that were registered by our court. And something that happened, Chairperson, which is unprecedented, we never had
We never registered that number before. So there's a violent South Africa, we really need to look into how do we address the violent dimensions that one finds in every sector of the country and address them. So this is actually then the picture that we have that is from the previous financial year. Now, the children, these are the sentences that were imposed by our courts against children. And mind you, we have Section 28 of the Act that says that a children should not be in prison. That should be a measure of last resort to imprison children. And there was a time at the time that we started with the implementation of the Child Justice Act where the numbers were getting low, where we even registered only two children went who were imprisoned. But now, if you look now, 112 children imprisoned. And the reason for that is because of the level of violence in the crimes perpetrated by children. Now, in terms of domestic violence, the Act, so these are the support services that we are providing to children. It is the clerk of the court is required to explain the rights of the child in the language that the child would understand and the level of understanding. And we also have a provision that requires the clerk of the court to assist the child with the completion of the application for the protection order. And also, and I have mentioned previously that the legal aid services that are also afforded, and the child also can testify with the assistance of an intermediary, and also the court accompaniment services are permitted. So meaning that a person who accompanies a child to court then is entitled to witness fees, and the witness fees is a combination of a food allowance and also the traveling allowance. Now, coming then to, I think this I have already mentioned, Chairperson, that in terms of the domestic violence integrated system, they are not yet collecting statistics for children, but it's something that we are working on. Now, we introduced what we call a Chairperson, the Femicide Watch. This it came, we started with this intervention that was in 20, to work on it, the special rapporteur came to our country, I think that was in 2015 or 2016 rather, and then the report that she submitted criticized the country on femicide and say that, why are you not having the Femicide Watch? So the Femicide Watch is a repository of all cases of femicide, So we started then with this project in 2017-2018. All right, so we are moving with it. So it's a repository where we're going to be putting all these cases of femicide, including then femicide perpetrated against children. So it has different variables and is looking at measuring all of these. When are the femicide cases perpetrated? Where are they? Weapons are being used, and also looking at the number of data metrics that we have, so as to help us as a country to find, to put together a responsive programmatic intervention, and that will also be impactful, all right, based then on this statistics. So this is just then the dashboard that shows you and that's the dummy data that is reflected there. So we'll be able then to check easy and this but Chairperson, this presentation is made by a lawyer, so I don't have the language for this, but it's something it's worth a project in the department working then with IJS, the integrated justice system. So now we are looking at having published next year. So now we have started with the integration, systems integration from the IJS transversal hub, the integration with the department is right now. And the reason for that is because we want children to learn about the law and also understand even the ones that are finding this in the school space, violence perpetrated in gay relationships between children violence that has been reported in schools. So now we come in and we are simplifying the piece of legislation in a manner in which they will understand and we communicate that to them. So we run it in our faith every financial year. So in quarter one up to quarter three, we have already covered 54 schools and we reach a total number of 30,281 children. Now, coming then to the end of the presentation, we are concerned of the level of sexual violence in the children. We are also concerned about the level of domestic violence in the children. And we are hoping that with all these provisions that we have put in this Amendment Act, will be able to care and contribute in terms of reducing the exposure of our children to violence. We are hoping that. And with the domestic violence, as you know, that the Principal Act, it was silent on the role of the social workers and the social development. But now, with this amendment, we incorporated it. And we ensured that we also now have a provision that requires the staff to, when they communicate the rights of the child, the child victim, or the rights of the victim of domestic violence, and they are expected they must also inform them of the sheltering services. So we have incorporated that. Now we are developing the online solution, a portal, a web portal for domestic violence. Because as you know, I think I forgot to mention that now, a parent and any person will be able now to apply for protection order online. So including social workers. Social workers can have to go to court. They can sit in your office. Then you apply for a protection order on behalf of a child. Because if you have a well, you have an interest in the well-being of that child based on your profession as a social worker. So now, what we have done now, that solution, we have already made a request from social development, and they gave us the list of the shelters that they have, so that they are in that portal, all right? And we are looking at now with the development of the portal, before the end of this financial year, we'll be done with phase two because we took a phase-in approach. So phase three now, that will be done in the next financial year. We are looking now at integrating now, doing the systems integration from the IJS and Transversal Hub. And fortunately, GSD is already there. It's already there in the IJS Transversal Hub. So we want to integrate this web portal with the GSD so that then the social workers then will get the alert notifications and all that when a person makes an application after court hours and outside court days, so that we have that support, that synergy and the interface between the services that are offered by our courts and also the psychosocial services offered by the Department of Social Development. So we are looking into doing that, and it's already there. Now, I mentioned that we are really, really, really concerned about the young age of the perpetrator of rape in South Africa. It's getting up every financial year. That should be a concern because children are the future of the country. And also then, I would also like just to make another request here to say that we are indeed requesting social support our court with intermediary services. And also to say, Chairperson, as a parting shot, that as a department, we really appreciate the consistent support that we are receiving from social development in all our intersectoral engagements, and also with the implementation of the national strategy, the GBV national strategy. What is it called? Yes, NSP, National Strategic Plan. So, and Chairperson, I would also just like to record that the DSD is one of the departments that actually led in finalizing their interventions that are expected in terms of the implementation of the NSP, and also us, and I will say that, proudly say that, Department of Justice and Social Development led in terms of the implementation, finalizing the indicators that we have in the NSP. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Isabel. Advocate Kambula. Thank you very much from both of you. Your presentation is rich and they need these discussions. Thanks, Advocate. Can I give over to the honorable members to be engaged with this presentation? Honorable Lizette, followed by Honorable Abraham.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Unfortunately, I've got load shedding and my devices, the batteries are low, so I hope that you will forgive me that my video is not on. But Chairperson, I would like to start by thanking you for putting this on our program today. I think if one listens to both presentations, and we thank both departments for the presentation, what we are really facing is a crisis. We know gender-based violence is a crisis, but you know, our most vulnerable children are being failed by us as a society, and really the levels of violence in South Africa should really be keeping us all up at night. I think it paints a very dark picture of where we are as a nation. And of course, it is our job as members of Parliament on this portfolio committee to really, you know, interrogate these issues and take them very seriously, because as Isabella also said, much more must be done. And I think I want to start with what Advocate Kumbula mentioned. She mentioned, for example, on various occasions, the role of social workers. And if we're talking about prevention, I think I want to start just by asking the department, since we are in a new year, whether they can give us an update with regard to the situation of the absorption of social workers. How far have we gone in our talks with Treasury? How far have we gone in terms of talking to other departments and business about absorbing social workers? Because I really do feel that, you know, one of the most important access points for children who are in danger, children who do not know where to turn, if you are in a home situation where you are being abused, you know, it really, I wonder how a child in that situation being abused, they are scared, they don't know where to turn. But if they know that at school I can turn to a social worker, or in my community there's a social worker that I can access, that we will start to, when we're speaking about prevention, as much as there are various avenues that we can use, I think social workers are very important. And today is budget day, so hopefully our ADG has got some good news for us in that regard. Because I also think when you speak about teenage pregnancies and the fact the crisis that is teenage pregnancies and the fact that it's risen by 60%, if a child had access to a social worker, possibly, then maybe, you know, we can also start to address some of these things. Previously, we spoke, and I want to speak also, as Dr. Kumbula mentioned now, about a central hub where we can access, I don't know if she meant for her own department or whether it will be a hub which the public will be able to access. But I find, Chairperson, a big problem is that people don't know where to access shelter services, for example. And a long time ago, we spoke about social development having a general call center. And I just wanted to know how far have we gone in that, because I think at the end of the day, we should be able to, if we talk about prevention, ordinary South Africans should be able to pick up a phone and say, I've got a crisis. I know we've got the GBV call center, but it's in housing. But we need to be able to pick up a phone and a call-free center, a free number that we can call, that will guide us in terms of where can I access a social worker? Where can I access a shelter service? Because at this stage, you know, I've got this one WhatsApp group where people are assisting children and women who are victims of violence. And it's always very puzzling in terms of where to access the requisite services. So I think such an important access point as well, whether it's on an app or whether it's through a call center, is very important, because we need a system that is agile in a country where violence is so endemic against children and women, and we really need to think about that. I also want to say, I know that a recent report is talking about human trafficking. We've seen a huge spike in human trafficking. Children are victims of human trafficking. And I also want to draw the attention, both the Department of Social Development and Justice, to another crisis that's unfolding on Facebook. As we speak now, there are individuals that are selling children on Facebook. I was just seeing a post now where somebody is selling a child for 15,000 rand. There is interest in that post, and it's not an isolated post. So we need to also be starting to focus on social media, where children are being offered. It's a child that was recently born, being offered up for not for adoption through legal process, but literally being sold. And we need to also, as various government partners, take this into consideration and come up with a plan on how to address that. ADD, also we speak about the issue of, Isabella spoke about the importance of NPOs and NGOs, and I don't think that we can understress that. It's very important that when a child or a mother seeks to access a type of service that will keep them safe, that is made available to them. And a lot of NGOs and NPOs are providing those services. But we've currently got a crisis not only in Gauteng, but specifically at this moment in KwaZulu-Natal, where as of 7 February, 140 NPOs providing child protection services and looking after women and children in need have not been paid. And they were forced, for example, they've run out of money to put food on the table for these people that they are looking for. Some of them have had to close their doors. And really, we cannot on the one hand talk about the crisis that is violence against children, and on the other hand, when organizations are trying to fill that gap, we are not giving them the requisite support. So really, I would like to know that why are we continuously struggling with the funding of NPOs and NGOs? Why do we continuously pay them late? And what can we do to solve this problem? I don't think, you know, now a mother or a child refers to a shelter, that shelter's door is closed because A, they can't pay their staff, B, they don't have food to provide to victims of violence. So really, it's a crisis that we need to look at. I think I also want to ask the Department of Justice. I think the online application system for your protection orders, of course, are it's a brilliant idea. But again, how can this platform be accessed? And are you, for example, when you're going to schools, are you educating children in these schools? Well, firstly, I think the programs that you're running at schools are brilliant, but I would like to see for us to roll this out at all schools, where children are able to be taught about their rights, laws, how to access information, and of course, to be made aware of things like, you know, the platforms that they can, where they can, you know, get the help of a social worker that can help them with this online platform. But how is this being publicized? In other words, how are we educating South Africans about the use of this platform? And also, is it being used? Because we often also hear about protection orders being issued, but then they're not enforced. We often hear about women who are killed, yet they had a protection order in place. Also, the issue of bail for rapists. I want to know if that is a... Is it a directive that bail for people who have committed sexual crimes are no longer granted? Because I've just read an article recently which says that the Pinetown Magistrate Court has actually granted bail for a 38-year-old man who raped his daughter. So I just wanted clarity in that regard. And then with regards to the national directive that must be issued by the Department of Social Development, that's my last question. Has DSC developed these directives? Why? What are the time frames? Why is it not been developed? Why has it not been developed? And are there any departments that have already issued them or are implementing them? Those are my questions for now. I think I've got more, but I can submit that to the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Lisa. Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Chairperson. And Chairperson, I'll just put my video on so that you can see it easily, but I'll close it because I believe some colleagues are struggling with, you know, load shedding and network. Chairperson, before I start, I just would like to, you know, emphasize that we spent over 45 minutes on technical glitches using the Zoom platform. And so therefore, I do just want to implore you that, you know, as a committee, we do start meeting in person so that we can, you know, save some time on all these technical glitches. Chairperson, and secondly, thank you for, you know, heeding my request in bringing this topic to the committee. The presentations, you know, when I'm reading it, gave me chills. We know that this is a crisis, but, you know, when you put the numbers up on the slides, it becomes even more real. And if I can just, you know, share two experiences from last night and this morning. And, you know, the minister touched on taxi violence and the impact of children. And we know it's across the country that taxis are holding school learners, and it's now even gone down to ECD learners, the children and the parents hostage, that they must make use of their services. And I know that we aren't the custodians of ECD anymore and school children, but at the end of the day, they still fall under the Children's Act. So I do hope that the minister, through our cabinet partners, are addressing this very serious situation with taxis. Because just this morning I received a call that two children were knocked down by a taxi driving in the yellow lane where they're not supposed to be driving, trying to avoid traffic. Fortunately, the children are alive, just very injured. And I mean, that could have been a mother this morning that lost two of her children because of this lawlessness of taxis. Then secondly, Chairperson, I mean, half past nine last night, my phone rang, and we had a child that was missing, did not come home from school. Long story short, the child was found in a few suburbs away from his home at 11 o'clock the night with two other children. And while two of the children's parents did report the case to staff, there was one mother who had no idea her child was missing, and this was 11 o'clock at night, which brings me into my questions to the department. I sometimes wonder if we are getting the right people to the people who really need these programs and interventions into the programs offered by DSE, because often the children and the parents that are experiencing this abuse and this neglect are often parents and children who are actually removed and isolated from society, and that they are removed and not involved in government, and they won't come forward. So, you know, the question is, how are these children and parents being identified to attend these programs? Are we getting the real vulnerable children into these programs? Then also, Chairperson, obviously we don't know the content of all these programs, and like Honourable Fundamentalist alluded to, are the new laws in terms of the Domestic Violence Act being discussed at these programs, their rights and responsibilities? Because, you know, it's one thing to just get children in the room and, you know, have presentations, and obviously we don't know what that is, but the rights and the new laws and what they can do and how they can do that, is that covered in the programs that these children are accessing? Then, Chairperson, I share the same sentiments regarding the MPOs, and I think it was Charles welfare in Pietermaritzburg that also had to close their doors for 2 days. And, you know, it would be interesting, and I would like to hear from the ADG if you can share with us, you know, noting inflation, noting the cost of living increases. Are the budgets to our MPOs going to be cut this year? Or will some of our MPO budgets, especially those dealing with child protection, will there be any increases for those budgets? And I mean, notably, most of the funding that DSD gives to the NGOs are for social workers and community workers. So when those budgets are cut, it means that there's, you know, less social workers and community workers on the ground. I also just want to find out from the department, what is our status on safety parents? I mean, do we have sufficient safety parents in the country? Are there actually individuals who are still signing up to be safety parents? You know, what is the status on that? Then, Chairperson, I'd like to find out, and once again, you know, we were the custodians of ECDs for a very long time, but is there a way where the department, albeit DOJ, where they actually have a report on the number of principals and even those teachers in school that actually file cases of child abuse? Do they track those numbers? Do they keep a record of those principals and teachers submitting cases of child abuse and neglect? Or does that function then lie with the Department of Education? And Chairperson, I'd also like to find out, and I think the Minister touched on it last week when we were speaking about SASA, that, you know, we do have local offices and provincial offices, and every ward has a ward committee, and on that ward committee is a representative for social development. So is this function then left to local government to include their ward representatives for social development into workshops and presentations that, like, for example, that we are receiving now? Or does social development also include those ward and local-based representatives? Then, Chairperson, I'd like to find out from the department, you know, we do, of course, we have to do a lot of victim-centered work, but surely the department can have a conversation with SAPS. And again, it's really unfortunate that SAPS was not available to be here today. But the men who have protection orders against it, SAPS know who these men are. What programs are being done with those men who have protection orders against them in order to break the cycle of violence? Because often we hear of protection orders being taken out, and then those men still commit these egregious crimes. So is there a program that is focusing on these men and that have protection orders against them to try and, you know, steer them in a different direction? Chairperson, I just want to touch on, you know, the behavioural change program. And I noted that in the one slide, it said that, you know, Western Cape does not have any or did not fund any of these programs. So I just need clarity, because it's my understanding that the funds that were given for these social behaviour change programs for HIV and AIDS came from national treasury, and there was conditional grants. Obviously, there were therefore conditions attached to it. The condition that was attached to it was that it was meant to go to GBV. The purpose was for GBV, and thus the Western Cape allocated it to GBV MPOs, and that is the reason why they do not have any behavioral change programs. And when National Treasury realized this, obviously the money was gone, and therefore they did not do that. So the question then becomes, how did the other 8 provinces get around a National Treasury conditional grant directive that it had to go to GBV, and actually not to behavioral change programs in the first place. Then, Chairperson, on to DOJ. Oh, and just the last question for social development is, has the DG for, DDG for social welfare been appointed yet? On to DOJ. I'd just like to find out, I know you said you're working on the ICMS system for capturing child murders. When will that system be upgraded and completed? I have the same question that Honourable Pandev Merva had with regard to the national directive to the department. You know, has it been done? Why not? When can we see it? Also, I have the similar questions with social workers, so I'm not going to repeat that. I also just want to highlight, you know, Chairperson, we have over, I think, 26,000 public schools. So I know the advocate mentioned that they are short on capacity. But, I mean, at the rate that we're going with only 100 schools a year, you know, and children come in and out of the school systems and they, you know, leave primary school, move on to high school, etc. I just, you know, I have this feeling in my pit of my stomach that we're actually not, you know, reaching enough children in the public school system. I think I will submit, you know, the questions with regard to children, to the child court backlog in writing. And then also just to the Department of Justice. I submitted a written question towards the end of last year that spoke to, you know, the number of cases of child abuse cases and, you know, conviction rates. And the totals that were given to me was very, very, very low. I think, you know, it was a lengthy period, it was for the last 10 years, that, you know, out of 3,697 criminal cases of child neglect and abuse against parents and caregivers, only 35 people had been imprisoned in that 10-year period. And, you know, the reply that I got from DOJ goes on to state that a significant number of these cases are withdrawn. And now, Chairperson, obviously, you know, I struggle to believe that there's no adult influence behind a child withdrawing a case against the relative, you know, you name it. So my question then becomes, and, you know, I fear that we're going to have a capacity challenge answered again. But, I mean, these children's names and details are in the record at some point before it was withdrawn. So is there any follow-up on these cases of child abuse? Does DOJ hand over those cases back to social development where these cases are actually, you know, followed up to find out if the child is back still okay? Because it just means that the child is, you know, back and still living in that house with the abuser. And let me just, I do also would like to know if the if social development can please share that study on the accessing of the CBD program, the one that they said that's doing so well. And then just lastly, you know, Chairperson, DOJ has these rights and responsibility booklets that I've requested and I hand out to ECDs and places that I go to. And it's a lovely booklet. And similarly, they also have the tool, the Youth Constitution. And in the same manner that we as MPs, when we start this job, we get given a constitution, I'd like to know, do these books actually get given to children in school so that they also know their rights and responsibilities, you know, up front? And then just in closing, you know, Chairperson, and I think the Minister and a few of the other speakers also alluded to it, that, you know, damaged children become damaged adults. And this vicious cycle of abuse just continues and continues. And it sometimes feels that we are fighting a losing battle when it comes to these child murders and violence against children. So, you know, Chairperson, I really do believe that this is an issue that we should keep a tab on
throughout the year and going forward. But thank you, Chairperson.
I'm giving no more time because really the presentation was too long and we combined two presentations. So the following honorable member is Honorable Marie, followed by Honorable Jay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I also want to say thank you for the presentation. But I feel that every week we have a presentation and we have a half an hour to get done because we need to take a bus to go to Parliament. And it's not doing justice to the committee because the people that it's representing must also then respond to the questions that is asked and then we are running out of time. I just want to raise a few concerns like my colleagues have done. I was looking at the slides and I look at the main parliament and they say the slide that 250 men were in that parliament representing the men in that parliament. But what is concerning is that all the women's program about gender-based violence and everything, men are not present and they are the perpetrators mostly that is doing all these crimes against women and children. So we need to make something more positive than 250 men going to parliament and discuss issues of what men are doing. And then I also want to see this YOLO of the only live once, FY, the $306 million that was given for this program. But if you look in my area, I have not seen any program that was running. When was it running and how was it running? Then they say create a safe space for children with HIV, sexual transmitted infections, and unintended pregnancies. We are having a crisis with teenage pregnancies and children are becoming as young as 12 years old that is getting pregnant. What is that program that is giving this money for this program? What are they doing about that to educate these young girls about sex safety and how to protect themselves as young ladies? Because we are having a crisis, we can go to school after school and see these young girls working with school clothes with this big stomach, it's like it's a fashion. So it's a very, very big concern to us as well, Chairperson. And then the rape cases that is happening at school, Chairperson, is that sometimes the perpetrator is still a teacher at school while their child is traumatized. They're taken out of school and taken to another school. I can even mention some examples that I know about. Parents fighting and saying the teacher must be removed. Teachers still stay in school for 2 years. The case started and so the principals are covering up for the teachers and all this thing. That's how much we removed because she was raped by a teacher, not her problem, but the child is being removed. So that is also a thing that we have to look on. How do you create a safer space for the child to be in that school and not the child to be removed because she didn't do something wrong? It was a teacher that is that perpetrated, because I just saw the other day a six year old teacher raped a 9-year-old girl. I mean, what is happening to our society? So that is also a thing that we need to address, Chairperson. And then you are saying no bail for rape cases for children under the years of 16 years old. Chair, we have seen a lot of cases where men get bail and then they go and rape again. In Canada, we saw 2 years ago, we have the gentleman even killed the child and he went to school where he had buried the child. So he was out on bail for rape and then he go out rape again. So something is wrong with our system that the same person can come out and then rape again and kill again. And then also the protection that the child is getting that is abused. Chairperson, I've seen a lot of times the children are being removed from the mother because the boyfriend is abusing the children and then they put in a place of safety. Now the woman that is looking after the children is looking after the children for 2-3 months and then the child is being removed again. That child is having trauma already being removed out of his house. He goes to a place of safety. After 3-4 months, they remove the child to another place of safety. And while the child is in the place of safety, that parent that is looking after the child is not getting any money from the department. And even if they ask the department, look here, I'm waiting in my assistant, because they bring the child without school clothes, without school books, without anything. That parent must then start doing everything from scratch.
are being able to take to a foster care or to a facility. And that is all the creating more space of the children. And then I want to speak about children in prison. These facts that was just showed on this slide is very disturbing. That a child can be in prison for killing 112 children are in prison. And then 136 children with sex offenses. And then they say the social worker can give them counseling support. What is wrong there? Somewhere we are facing it as a community. So how come the child can murder another child and rape another child? Something is exactly wrong. We need to discuss why it is that we as parents, we as government are being, because we think that we are failing our people. And if you look at all the statistics that was that that you have we saw today, 137 statutory rape of children, 139, others, what is others? 66, what is others? Yes, they don't say what is others, but 66 is a lot of others. So we are asking yourself, a child can murder 50 people, 50 children are murdering another child. No. So we are, something is not right. All these things look nicely on these slides. Presentation after presentation, it looks nice and black and white. But what is happening in our community is a total different thing, Chairperson. And it is disturbing and it is alarming that we come and we sit and we talk about it, but at the end of the day, nothing is being implemented. Social workers are unemployed. There's not enough to do the work, but there's more than enough work, but they don't have the social workers for that. You see, places of safety sometimes don't get the funding. Parents looking after the children don't get the funding. They are struggling. They are writing letters. They are telling us that it's a problem. And then it seems like there's nothing we can do because it seems like everywhere there's racism. So see, this presentation is really an eye-opener, but I must say that somehow we are failing as a nation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Pauline. Honorable members, the following honorable member is Honorable Mangani.
Thank you very much, Chair. I must also thank all the presenters that have given us the eye-opener. What I want to talk about is what Isabel was presenting. There was a good program that she was presenting, especially the one that say, let's talk, family. I want you to know when these talks happen. Is there anywhere where they mix the girl child and the boy child? And then when they don't mix them together, when they talk, is there anything that they see is changing between boys and girls? Because why I'm asking this question is because we were raised, in the olden days, we were raised otherwise, to say a boy doesn't do this, doesn't do this. But as department, if we are still repeating what we thought in the olden days, it won't show impact in the community. And then the other issue that I wanted to ask Chair is this one of saying that all this department is working in silos. They only come when they are around the table together to talk. If they were working together, I'm definitely sure the Department of Health, they are having also if they didn't neglect the primary health care, it was going to also assist the social development because they are also teaching more about education. That will include the teenage pregnancy, that will include the health, that will include care, that will include
manifestation of all the ills that are happening. The way we're going to do it is, I just want to ask our CSD if this program they can't do it together with the health department, because I think this program that Isabella has talked about, they also talk similarly thing to what the primary health care used to do in the olden days. The other thing that I wanted to, I have noticed that we have, the department have mentioned something to say, this YOLO and what this program that they were talking about, it got an impact. But when I was listening to Advocate Sambuli, I didn't hear it making impact, because the statistics that he was talking about is very much huge. Or on this, in this issue that Isabel, you were mentioning, don't, when we are with these boys and girls, talk more about sex, because now we are also at home in our houses, some of us talking to the boys and the girls with this sex, because it's no more a secret.
Hello.
No, it's somebody who's talking. I thought it's you. That's why I was talking. And then the lastly, I want to know what Advocate Kambule was saying about the online protection order. How is that is done? How somebody can get it? Because I had to also, she mentioned child offenders, and then the number were high also. So I want to know, how does it work, this protection order, and how does it take long to respond? Or is this only for social worker to the Justice Department, or anyone can do it, this protection order online? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mangani. I think we are done with her, but I'm really all concerned also. You know, when you listen.
Sorry, Chair, my hand was also up. I just raised it late because of connectivity issues.
Okay. Let me give you another brief song.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to honorable members and both the departments. Chair, well, honorable members have covered most of the things, but what I wanted to raise was that understanding the presentation of social development is that the systems or the programs are there in paper, but in our society they don't get there. So one would also say that the department should prioritize public participation or communicating or going to the public with these programs, especially your YOLO programs. We don't know them. Like, I might know them as an MP, but society doesn't know them. Secondly, Chair, the issue of the protection of children, as the colleague from social development was presenting, you would tell that these programs are there, but a lot is not right in our societies in terms of when it comes to the protection of kids. Number one, Chair, I've set an example. When there are protests, the first stop is to go and stop children from going to school. Either they are stopped or Baba keeping them removed from classes to go and picket. Kids are not protected. Secondly, Chair, you find a person like last year, there was a story, national TV, a person is
a child went missing in Kanduzi, I think the only child, and you find that last week those people came out of 5,000 days where they killed a child, took out of the child, but bapumiling a bill of 5,000. So I think we have all these things in paper that protect a child, but when it comes to reality, it does not happen. Secondly, we say,